Hello and welcome to another edition of Tech Enthusiast. I'm one of your hosts, Neil.
And I'm your other host, Simon. Now, I wanted to start this week by touching on last week's, because last week's podcast just wasn't long enough.
No, it needed more content.
I think it did. Yeah, the 50 minutes. Or was it 57 minutes, wasn't it?
No, it was about, I think it was 47 something or other.
Oh, okay, yeah. We were well off our 1 hour limit then.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was just after we did the podcast, I'd then read a great article on where the start menu actually came from. And it turned out they were doing some usability testing on Windows 3.1. And they had the developers there, and they brought in a behavioural scientist. So they were watching these people, and this guy was trying to use Windows. And the task was, I think, to create something on a word processor. And he sat there for 10 minutes and couldn't open the word processor. So then he left, and the developer said, you know what the problem is, don't you? It was just an idiot. Users are idiots. They don't know what they're doing. Obviously, it was just really stupid. So they went to speak to him. Turned out he was a rocket scientist.
Yeah. Right.
So probably not the stupidest guy in the world. And it just demonstrated just how bad Windows 3.1 was.
Yeah.
So then this behavioural scientist just had this moment of clarity where he came up with the start menu. And he even created, you know, a little task bar along the bottom. But when he imagined it, it ran along the top like tabs, you know, on Chrome.
Oh, right.
Or any other browser.
Yeah.
But apparently he believes Microsoft vetoed it because it looked too much like Apple. You know, because Apple always had the top bar rather than the bottom bar. So yeah, that's how we actually ended up with the start bar.
Wow.
In the task bar. So yeah, I wish I could have squeezed that into last week's podcast, but recorded slightly too early, Neil.
And for not long enough, obviously.
Not long enough, but yeah, the start menu's getting a lot of love again. It just won a design award for Windows 10.
Yeah, and I've got Windows 10 on my machine now, and it does look really nice. And I think they've gotten rid of some of the bloat from the start menu as well, because there were always folders in there for like photos and, you know, media and stuff that they obviously realised nobody uses those folders.
You can heavily customise the start bar this time now, can't you? As
well? Yeah,
so you can get rid of the active tiles or change the colours.
Yeah,
and everything.
So it's stripped down, and well, it looks like there's more there, but it's because it's customizable, it's more useful as a tool. But yeah, I like it. It's good. I mean, it's bizarre because I don't use the machine heavily, because so I got it and I was like, yay, what can I do to kind of take this puppy for a test drive?
Let's use Edge. Let's get on the internet.
Yeah, Edge is all right, but I think it's very different to Chrome, and I'm so used
to
using
Chrome.
Talking
about browsers, I read something really interesting. I think it was an article by, is it Battery Box? Could have been Battery Box. You know, because I don't know if you've noticed, but Safari's been getting a bit of stick for being the new Internet Explorer.
All right.
You know, lagging behind.
Yeah.
So they ran some battery tests of Chrome versus Safari versus, what are the browsers? A number of the browsers anyway.
Yeah.
But depending on your browser, the battery usage was so different.
Yeah.
I think on Safari you got an hour and a half more.
Really?
Yeah, from the battery. That's just how efficient it is compared to the other browsers in terms of CPU and power consumption.
Right.
So it gets a bit of stick for perhaps not being as cutting edge as Chrome.
What was that on mobile or like?
Oh, do you know what? I read a snippet.
Right.
So I would imagine it's going to be laptop because when you're using a browser on iOS, you have to use WebKit anyway.
Oh, yeah, true.
So you can't use your own engine. So it wouldn't make much difference. So I would imagine because of that, it would have been a specific laptop. So maybe, you know, digging into it, if it was a MacBook, you could argue, well, you know, Safari should work better on a MacBook. But then at the same time, Google should have the developer chops to make it work good on a MacBook.
True.
Yeah, I was like, oh. Yeah, I found that really interesting. Huge amount of battery life extra just by running Safari. So, yeah, big love of Safari. But now Windows 10, I'm back on the Raspberry Pi addiction. It's got me again. So I'm on to the Pi 2s now.
Yeah.
So I'm thinking about just popping Windows 10 on a, a Pi 2.
I'd be interested to see what that looks like.
I just want to see how it runs.
Yeah.
So I'm probably going to do that in the next couple of weeks.
Cool.
I'm not too sure if I'm going to be able to boot up the narrator or anything, because I think that might be a bit too CPU intensive for the Pi. But we'll see. I don't know, maybe the stripped down version for the Pi will have a narrator.
Yeah.
And it'll be quite impressive.
Mm-hmm.
We had to get an Xbox soon anyway.
Yeah, yeah. So they're bringing Windows 10 to Xbox. I'm not entirely certain what that means, but I think it's from a design perspective,
it's going to be the base OS.
Yeah.
And then the Xbox UI is going to sit on top of it.
Yeah.
Then because it's got the Windows 10 base, you'll be able to start using things like Cortana.
Yeah.
And then over time, I'm sure they'll start slipping in apps like Edge and so on.
Well, there's already the Bing search on there, which will be improved by Cortana. There's already a ton of apps for the Xbox, so it'll be kind of integrating those things.
It'd be interesting to see, would the Xbox be able to become a home computing platform with Windows 10? For example, if all of a sudden you were using Office 365.
Yeah. Because that would be,
you can pick up an Xbox One for how much? Probably use now, 200?
Yeah, probably about that.
So yeah, a pretty good computer that can play games.
And they've just announced a chat pad.
Yeah.
So you could type.
Yeah. For £200. Seems like a pretty good deal.
Mm.
It really does. It harps back to the days of when you could run Linux on the PlayStation.
Yeah.
Because you could buy the Linux kit.
Yeah.
I wish I'd have bought that. That was pretty cool back then to be able to run a full-blown operating system like that on your PlayStation.
They've taken a real step back from the kind of media hub TV thing, but then they've just announced that they're going to have DVR, proper DVR, because previously it was just like you can pause live TV, but you're not going to be able to schedule to record shows and things.
When I imagined voice control and the fact it was going to do TV, I imagined saying things like, Xbox, put on Comedy Central.
Yeah.
The Xbox does that. Maybe right now it's putting on Comedy Central.
It's not connected to a TV in that way, so it won't be. But yeah, you just switched it on.
It would be pretty cool if, you know, Cortana.
Yeah.
And you can do things like, record whatever episode of whatever.
That would be amazing. Yeah. I think a lot of people previously have complained about how that all works because it's, you know, you're kind of layering services on services because you're going through your existing cable box, etc.
Yeah.
But yeah, I don't know. I mean, there's always room for improvement. But the fact that you will actually be able to schedule records for shows is pretty cool, really.
Yeah, I kind of find it cool when you could do that on the Sky app on your phone.
Yeah.
You could just set up a show to record. I remember doing that. Yeah.
Being at like somebody else's house and going, oh man, yeah, I want to watch that, and then just setting it to record from my phone.
Yeah. That was pretty much the only cool thing that Sky did that was cutting edge.
It's pretty much the only cool thing Sky have done in the last 25 years.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's pretty rubbish, to be honest. Sky, let's face it. They're finally, I think it was a couple months ago, after how many years they've been going, finally started looking at accessibility for an accessible program guide.
Wow.
Which is just a black background with white text.
Awesome.
Yeah, it took a lot of years in development to come up with. Why don't we?
You can't rush these things, Simon.
Well, no, you can't. You know, I know white on black is a very technically difficult thing to pull off.
Yeah.
It's never been done.
Nope.
Never been done.
Ever.
Terrible company.
Anyway, Windows.
Well, yeah. I ain't got it yet.
No. So, I mean, it looks good. Like I say, I literally kind of went, okay, what can I do? I don't know. Really didn't.
I'll just get my mobile phone out and surf the internet on that instead.
Yeah. I'd look at the start menu and I think it had defaulted my default browser to Edge. Because I clicked on the link.
Yeah, it is the default. Internet Explorer is there, but Edge is the default.
Yeah, But I'd upgraded and Chrome was previously my default, so it had changed
that. They've changed the way when you install a browser as well.
Right.
You no longer get the splash about setting the new browser as default.
Oh, right.
You've actually got to go into the settings yourself.
I thought they were forced to do that at some point by some kind of
governing body. I don't think they were forced to do that by the EU. I think what they were, got told off of was pre-packaging a browser so people didn't have a choice.
Right. And now they're pre-packaging two browsers so people do have a choice. Edge and Internet Explorer.
I can't remember what the exact EU was on. It was something like that. It was to do with a pre-packaged.
It was like a competition thing, wasn't it?
It was something to do with the fact that you couldn't remove it.
Yeah. Yeah.
So you couldn't uninstall Internet Explorer at that point in time.
Yeah.
Because I believe they claimed it was integrated into the File Explorer.
Mm.
So you couldn't remove Internet Explorer without corrupting the File Explorer.
Fair enough.
Should really take note of these EU laws.
Americans just kind of go roughshod over it until they got told that they can't, and then kind of go, all right, then, blooming Europeans. Tends to be the stand that you see. But yeah, like all those Apple ads.
Well, the Apple ads now are getting so out there in terms of not really demoing, hey, look what our product does.
Yeah.
Look at the emotional response our product could produce.
Yes.
Buy it, please.
Yeah. Here's some idyllic kind of picturesque views of families and people swiping and doing things.
Although the best,
with a little bit of
the best execution jingly
jangly
of
guitar
that,
over the top.
I thought was you know when Google did the email account. You know, when they were sending themselves emails for 18 years.
That made me cry.
That was a beautiful commercial.
It was a
that
fantastic
was,
commercial.
I wonder how many people started email accounts for the children at that point.
Yeah, it was. That was a really effective commercial.
Yeah, that was very, very well done. Talking about PR, Neil, OnePlus PR this week.
Right.
They usually have off-the-wall PR.
Yeah.
But this week, the CEO jumped it up a notch.
Yeah.
By saying they've got an even better smartphone coming out than the OnePlus 2.
He didn't say better. He didn't say either or. He didn't say whether it was better, whether it was a dumbed-down one. He just said another.
I believe the wording was, he thought the OnePlus 2 was going to be his daily driver until he saw this other phone.
True, he did say that.
Saying that does suggest
that possibly it's,
a better looking phone, higher spec phone.
Hang on a minute. He thought the OnePlus 2 was going to be his daily driver until he saw this surprise phone he had no idea about as the CEO of the company.
I think maybe you see a vendor of a product, but then obviously now he's got
the final release.
But he does say in his own words that the OnePlus 2 final release production version is really nice, but this other phone is wow.
Mm.
So yeah,
it's a bizarre move.
It's a ballsy move.
It's hard to understand how this will have a positive effect on OnePlus 2 sales days before it actually
is released. You know, the pre-order invite list is up at 2.5 million just before we started recording this show.
Yeah.
So when we jumped on that list,
it was it was about 400,000.
400,000, yeah. So it's added 2 million since we've got on the list.
Yeah. It's a lot.
Yeah. Well, I'm no idea with that guy. He's so off the wall.
Yeah.
Coming out and he thinks it's Elon Musk.
I think you're right. I think he does. Yeah.
Let's do a pre-announcement suggested announcement to watch my stock price jump so I make 2 billion.
Yeah. Next year we're releasing trailers for announcements.
Well, one tweet can be just enough.
It can.
Now, it'd be interesting. I still really want to get hold of that phone.
Yeah.
I think I'm moving more towards the OnePlus 2 over the Motos now.
Yeah.
Definitely going to get the OnePlus 2.
Yeah, I think I'm definitely going to get the OnePlus 2.
I'm hoping to be in the first wave. if I can stay within that 50,000 bracket, which I currently am,
yeah.
By, did you say next Tuesday?
Tuesday is the release, yeah.
So yeah, not long, hopefully, if I don't slip another 10,000. Although I've only slipped 20,000 places and they've added 2 million people.
Yeah.
So that's not a bad slip.
It's not bad.
To say they've added 2 million more.
Hmm.
Yeah, I'll still win the list. I'll still win the list.
Yeah, but after, yeah, I mean, I said it last week, I know I did, but yeah, OnePlus One is a great phone, and I'm just really looking forward to the OnePlus Two.
Yeah, well, the price point is great for the spec.
Definitely.
To be honest, I'm interested in some, for once, usually I hate this about Android phones, how everyone adds their own, well, not really bloatware, but additional wear.
Yeah.
So the additional gestures that they've added, I'm actually really intrigued to use.
And even on the OnePlus One, some of the extra apps, like there's a screen recorder app on the OnePlus One, so you can, you know, you can record whatever's going on your screen at that point in time.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, it's an absolute boon for app developers.
Definitely, yeah. Yeah, I remember for iOS, an app released on the store just before it got pulled that allowed screen recording.
Yeah.
And I think the way it did it, this was a real shanky way to do it, but it took loads of screenshots, really quick succession, and then turned on the mic.
Right.
So it not only got ambient noise, but the app noise.
Yeah.
And then stitched it together.
Wow.
Yeah, it wasn't the best.
No, I bet.
Solution, but it was a way to do it on iOS. But now it's built into Xcode. You can actually put it into an app now. Screen recording. Right. Well, you know, Twitch and things are so big now.
Yeah, true.
That they're trying to introduce it in the app development process. So any developer now can add a screen recording function to a game or an app.
Is that for new for iOS 9 then? Or?
Yeah, that's for iOS 9.
Okay.
Well, iOS 9's not too far away now.
No, just around the corner.
It's October-ish and it'll be out.
Yeah.
Yeah. So what were the tech news that we have this week, Neil?
Well, there was something else you wanted to say about Windows in relation to Weezer.
Oh, God, yeah. That was while I was reading, got, you know, down a rabbit hole, isn't it?
Yeah.
So I was reading about the start menu, Windows 95, and then I was thinking to myself, oh, I can remember having the Windows 95 disc.
Yeah.
Back to the old pirating days, me and a friend bought a copy, a real copy, and shared it because we couldn't afford a copy each.
Yeah.
So I had the disc, I took it home, went to install it. And then I was navigating through the folders and I came across a music video that was hidden in the folders and it was Weezer, Buddy Holly.
Right.
And the entire music video had been put on the CD.
Yeah.
Like nowadays with YouTube, that seems...
Yeah.
Something so accessible. Back then, to see a music video full length on your computer was jaw-dropping. You're like, what's this? It's a movie file. Wow.
For the youngsters amongst you, it was called Windows 95 because that's when it came out.
Yeah. So that, I think that was one of my first introductions to Weezer.
Yeah.
So when did Weezer start releasing? Would that have been at the
early 90s? It would have been, it would have been around then. Yeah.
So that was a pretty big coup for them to actually be on the Windows 95 install disc.
Yeah, definitely.
But you had to find it on the disc.
Mm, it wasn't that prominent.
No, I don't remember there being like a menu button to click or anything. You just had to navigate around the disc and then there was just this, back then, large file. It was probably around 30 megs. 30 meg for one file?
Unbelievable.
That can't be right. Yeah. I'm going to have to open it to find out what a 30 meg file is. God, now I think I've probably got photos on my phone that are bigger than 30 meg.
Yeah.
That video must have been something like 320 pixels.
Yeah.
Something like that. So you could fit that on what, like a Nokia 60... 100 or 200 screen, you know.
Yeah,
imagine that as a video. But of course, back then your computer was probably running at resolution 800 by 600. So, oh God, what does a 4K display run at now? Just under 5,000.
Yeah.
By 2,000 or 3,000, is it?
Something like that.
So yeah, that would be the equivalent of the size of the Windows 10 start button in the corner. That's how big that video was back then.
Yeah, I remember finding, like, somehow transferring videos from, like, old school Nokia phones to a computer and then watching them later on, it just being like a postage stamp in the middle of the screen.
Yeah, I used to, but the way around that is you used to knock the resolution of your monitor down.
Right.
So if you did your monitor resolution down to 640, then the video would look big. It'd still be quite pixelated, but at least it'd be filling a good amount of the monitor. Yeah, none of this HD 4K business back then.
I still say, when I remember saying it to somebody when they first brought HD out, and I was like, high definition, that's kind of capping yourself, really, with that description. I hope they go the Street Fighter route of naming schemes, so you get like Super HD, Alpha Plus Plus, Championship Edition.
We went to Ultra HD, didn't we?
Yeah, Ultra HD. Yeah. So they kind of did follow that naming scheme.
I don't know
where
they're going to go after UHD.
No.
Who was even making...
Well, they're just talking Ks now, aren't they?
You know, 4K, 8K. Yeah, because 4K is not even a defined standard, is it?
No.
Because within 4K, you can have lots of different resolutions. Because I can remember, I think I was doing some filming with someone, and they were using, is it called Red? That modular camera.
Oh, yeah.
Is it Red?
Yeah.
Yeah. So they're using Red, and we were talking about 4K and how many different 4K formats there were. So I went home, jumped on Wikipedia, was like, oh my God, how many different 4Ks is there? There's a lot.
Yeah.
There's a lot. A hell of a lot. Hopefully they'll define a standard.
They will do it at some point, aren't they? It's still at a point now where it doesn't particularly make sense for consumers because the media isn't available. You can have the TV and the prices are coming down, but 4K media isn't, you know, you try streaming 4K media, that's going to be great fun.
Oh, wow. Not many of us have even all got fibre, have we?
Exactly.
Yeah. You definitely don't need fibre. Yeah. Although, I was reading Tokyo are phasing out ADSL.
Really?
Yeah, fibre only.
Wow.
A gigabit connection. I think it's gig up, gig down as well, is $40 a month.
Wow.
But there's that company in the UK doing it called Hyper something, 50 quid a month for gig up, gig down.
That's impressive.
Yeah. So it's going to happen, and I know BT are really experimenting with very, very high speeds.
Yeah.
Because they figured out a way to... Because the biggest problem is always the backbone. But, yeah, they figured out how to really boost the speed of the backbone.
Cool.
So... at some point, we probably will all have access to a gigabyte. But talking about old school technology, that reminds me of something else I read this week about the new printer technology. Well, we say new printer technology. Inkjet printers have always been a bit of a bane. And I can remember, like, not even super high-end inkjets, but if you're doing a lot of printing, you could add ink reservoirs.
Right.
So you'd pour the ink into the reservoir and it'd come through and it'd print. Apparently what Epson have done is seen that, thought, I've got a good idea. Why don't we use ink reservoirs instead of ink cartridges?
Yeah.
So now the printer price has jumped up, because before printers used to be cheaper to buy a printer instead of printer cartridges, didn't it, really?
Yeah.
New set of printer cartridges, I should buy a new printer.
Yeah.
It's £10 cheaper. Roll away that printer. It's quite disposable. Yeah, but now they're going to have these reservoirs. 2 years of ink, they reckon.
2 years?
2 years worth of printing ink in it. And then you just buy a bottle of ink and you fill up the ink bottle and your printer can carry on printing.
Wow.
Yeah. Totally changing the printer model around there.
Yeah, definitely.
Although there was a point in time, you know, I was, oh yeah, I like my weight in gold. I'd always have liked my weight in printer ink cartridges. on a milliliter basis, I think it was worth more than like Bollinger and Dom Perignon.
Yeah, which is ridiculous.
That is, yeah.
And they had you over a barrel.
They did.
Really did.
Because, you know, on an Epson printer, you try and buy third-party cartridges, but then after a bit, the printer would click on.
Yeah.
They weren't official, and all of a sudden your printer would stop working. You're like, oh, great.
Yeah.
Yeah. So now, finally, we can print and print and print. Although, who prints anymore?
Companies that like wasting money.
Outside of work, when was the last time you printed something?
Well, I have had to print things off, but I have done it at work because it's just not worth owning a printer. But it probably happens maybe 4 times a year for me.
Yeah.
I do know people who holiday a lot and print off like boarding passes and things like that.
Yeah, that's what that watch is for.
But yeah, it's probably 3 or 4 times a year I need to print something off.
The only thing I have to print now, and it always grates me every time, is whenever I get a contract through, yeah. I have to print it, sign it, scan it, send it off. I'm thinking, oh, can we not use an online digital setup for this? Mm. Where I just click a button or type in my name. And it seems so outdated for any company now to be doing that. Especially for why I'm signing contracts. It's just, oh, come on. Just send it me digitally.
Simon, the other day, I had to send a fax at work.
Do you know what? Right, when I used to be at work, I didn't know how the fax worked.
Right.
I used to go into the office and say, can someone send this fax? Because it's just too old for me. I don't want to learn how to use it. It's too antiquated.
It's just no point.
Someone else send this fax. I'm having nothing to do with it. I used to hate. So it's like, which way did Randy put it? I don't. You can tell me, but I'm not listening. I don't want to learn. I do not want to know how to use the fax machine.
Yeah.
Oh, I hate fax machines. Can you remember somewhere? You used to ring a number and you accidentally got the fax machine.
Oh, yeah, that happened to me the other week, actually.
Really?
Yeah, I was presented with 2 phone numbers in an email. One was their phone number, the other one was the fax one, and I accidentally typed in the wrong one and got that in my ear, and it stung.
That reminds me of the old 56K modem. I used to know the tones, so I could tell what speed it was connecting at.
Yeah.
So if the tones changed before it connected, I knew it was going to connect at low speed. So I disconnect it and then redo it.
All right, Rain Man.
Come on. It's back then I was using, was it FreeServe?
Oh, yeah.
Can you remember FreeServe?
I do, yeah.
Was it owned by Dixon?
I can't remember.
It's Dixon's, I think, wasn't it?
Yeah, I can't remember.
But you were only allowed 2 hours for free.
Anyway.
They weren't back then.
Oh, were they not?
No, Dixon's bought Curry's a few years ago.
Yeah.
But yeah. You only allowed 2 hours, then you had to disconnect.
Oh.
So at 1 hour 59 seconds, you'd like disconnect. You're like, redial. And of course, it would only become free after 6 p.m.
Hmm.
So as soon as Simpsons used to come on television, they used to start dialing. And then hopefully by the time Simpsons had finished, you'd be connected at the speed you'd want.
Yeah.
So then you could stay on the internet for 2 hours, and obviously 2 hours on 56K, you got to visit 8 websites.
Sweet.
Back then, though.
Look at least 2 naked ladies.
You know what? I don't actually remember the internet being super slow, because sites were designed...
True.
...for the connections.
Yeah.
And then...
It was a lot more simplistic.
Yeah, as fast the connections came out, you could see the complexity of the websites. And that's why we're having these big problems at the minute. I know a lot of tech blogs are really chatting about it, is even if you post up a 500-word article, the page load is around 14 meg.
Crikey.
And it's because of all the ad networks and pulling down this and pulling down that, but 14 meg for a 500-word article on a 56K modem, 14 meg would have taken an age. I can remember downloading 650 meg ISOs for Linux distros and stuff. And I was using FTP that could do a Zoom, and you were over the moon if you hit 7K down.
Boom.
7K. You're like, oh my God, how fast is my internet connection? It's 7K.
Have you heard about the Space Jam website?
Oh, why does that mimic a 56 came out or something?
No, the Space Jam website is still as it was when the movie came out. They haven't altered it.
And it's
still
1996 or something?
Something like that. And basically, it's like an ongoing joke with the guys at Warner Brothers, like who deal with the website. Every time there's like some kind of crazy update, they do whatever they can to keep the Space Jam website intact. So if you go to the official Space Jam site, which I think is within the Warner Brothers site, it's like a sub-site, but yeah, it is intact as it was back in the 90s. I
bet it loads like that.
Yeah, I bet it does. And I bet it looks nasty.
It might not on your ultra HD screen. Yeah. It might look pretty
not.
Good.
Maybe not, but yeah. But they've just announced Space Jam 2.
Yeah, is Jordan going to...
No.
Who is it?
I can't remember.
Kobe?
I want to say it's Kobe.
LeBron?
Oh, it might be LeBron.
Probably LeBron.
I don't do basketball.
I'd have thought it'd be LeBron.
It might be LeBron.
Yeah,
it's either Kobe or LeBron.
Well, Kobe's not exactly...
No, you wouldn't have thought. He's not exactly family friendly, is he?
Not really, no.
It's probably LeBron, though.
Yeah, it's probably LeBron. Yeah. Better shot with LeBron.
So, yeah, so that could put the original Space Jam site in danger.
Oh, I used to have a Space Jam and SNES.
I think I only ever saw it for the first time about 3 or 4 years ago because it was on TV one day. The film, yeah.
Have you ever seen the Michael Jordan life story?
No.
That's a good watch, actually. Because when he was a kid, he wanted to do two pro sports, but two pro sports is pretty much unheard of, isn't it?
Yeah, and so, he did go into baseball.
But yeah, that was it. That was the second sport to play.
Yeah.
So then the movie covers him going into baseball and then his transition back to...
You know Bo Jackson.
Yeah, transition back to basketball. But yeah, that was a good digression from what we were originally talking about, printers.
Wasn't it just? Yeah. So, yeah, I think Gamescom this week, because we've touched on that with the Xbox stuff, and lots of announcements. Just, it's huge, absolutely huge, that thing, bigger than E3.
Really?
Yeah, yeah. I think they were expecting 100,000 people. On the first day. Yeah, because the difference with E3 is it's open to the public. With Gamescom, is it is actually there's press days and there's public days.
Right.
So that's why it's bigger than E3 because it is open to the public. But yeah, they're expecting 100,000 people on the first day.
How do you feed 100,000 people?
I don't know. It's never something that's come up.
Comes to mind because I was in London the other day and they're building the new Google HQ behind King's Cross.
Right.
And that thing is as long as the spire is tall.
Holy heck.
Yeah. It is one big building.
How many canteens is that going to need?
Yeah. That's what I was thinking exactly.
Yeah.
The food that that building is going to go through is going to be mind-boggling.
Yeah. Because Google employees don't take a box lunch.
No, they can't, yeah. You know, when the employees that work there for a long time seem to moan a bit about the canteen, but I always really enjoy it whenever I go. Well, you love free food, so I'm like, oh my God, it's free. What do you mean? I can have it all.
Yeah.
I can have this, then this, and then I can have the cake.
Sweet.
What do you mean that the ice cream machine over there is free? I can go up to there and take out all those ice lollies for free.
Yeah.
Seriously. Oh, the beer's free. What? What? I'm staying here.
Yeah, but as far as Gamescom comes, I've not been paying that much attention to it. I've seen a few Xbox things, but the games, they're just stuff that we already knew about. There's further stuff coming about it. Crackdown 3 is a widely anticipated game for the Xbox. A game called Scalebound, which looks quite awesome.
What's that about?
It's basically, well, Monster Hunter is a famously inaccessible game. Basically, it's got a large barrier to entry, and people are saying that Scalebound looks a little bit like Monster Hunter, but with a Devil May Cry mechanic.
Right.
So, yeah, a lot easier to get into and button mash. But, yeah, I'm trying to think of other stuff. Mirror's Edge 2 looks... I loved Mirror's Edge. Absolutely. I'm not big on first-person games, but that game just played like a dream. So I'm really looking forward to Mirror's Edge 2. Yeah, and just like I say, a lot of the games that we already knew about from E3, but more information coming out about them more than anything else.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I know, I didn't really keep up with GamesCon.
No.
No.
No, I've been busy. I've been far too busy, unfortunately. Otherwise, I would have kept a bigger eye on it.
I think this week's been strange for 10 years. There's been lots of small stories.
Yeah.
Nothing. I think just because last week, too much news last week.
Yeah.
And then this week, it's like, oh,
okay, well, we are going to have to wrap up in a bit, but there was another little story that's been teased for a while, which was the Lexus hoverboard.
The future's here.
The future's kind of here if you kind of gym it a bit and pretend.
Yeah, you've got a metal floor and make sure that, some powerful magnets.
Yeah.
Hang on, does it use some, like, they have, like, liquid nitrogen
cooling? Liquid nitrogen cooling.
Yeah. Which, they did not have that in Back to the Future.
No, and yeah, as a result, that you've got like little clouds of smoke coming out.
Yeah, but that makes it look cooler.
Oh, it does. It looks awesome. I mean, the video looks really, really cool. And there's a section on the video where they've. I mean, obviously the skate park that is specially designed for it that they're using.
Is it somewhere in Spain or something?
I think so. Weather looked nice.
Spain.
Yeah. but yeah, there's a rectangle of water in the middle of the skate park, so you watched it skim over the top of some water.
Oh, they're just trying to redo Back to the Future too. Yeah, the water, I know. Scene.
And you've no idea how deep the water was. On his first pass over, he jumped off it to safety, like halfway across, like implying that if he hadn't, he could have, because he'd not got enough speed up, he could have ended up under the water. But yeah, I think I'm sure that was done for effect.
I don't, how much are these companies willing to put in an advertising campaign now?
Yeah,
because R&D on that device was not cheap.
Yeah, and to say that, you know, as we've already said, that this device cannot work in the real world. It has to have a very specific set of circumstances to work.
I suppose, so you're setting the engineers a problem we've got to solve.
Yeah.
Teaching that is... Because if we had that commercial at the minute, I forgot who it is, but there's a car manufacturer. And I don't know if it can't... It's got to be legit, otherwise it won't get past UK advertising rules.
Right.
But you have to learn to do origami one-handed with your non-dominant hand.
What?
Yes. To improve your dexterity. So you're better at crafting to make these custom parts on the car.
Holy heck.
Because it's a UK commercial.
Yeah.
I've got to believe it's legit, because unless it's made explicit that it's a joke.
Yes. Like that stupid fruit cider advert at the minute that really bugs me.
But I could be totally wrong there, but next week I'm sure there'll be a retraction where that commercial with a straight up joke.
Yeah. I've not heard of that, so I don't know.
Yeah, well, I'm going to have to look for after now. Shouldn't have done this while we were recording. I should have looked it up first.
Yeah.
And then I mentioned it.
But if you've not seen the Lexus video, it's worth the hoverboard video. It is worth going and having a look. It does look awesome. You've got like the beginning of the video where people are like, they're obviously skaters trying to ride it, but obviously it's a different experience, and falling off it a few times. And then you see them actually, you know, riding the board around the park really, really well. And then, of course, it's culminated at the end by a specially designed set of ramps. And the guy coming down the ramp, and just as he jumps over from one side to the other, a Lexus drives underneath.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, you wouldn't have thought they'd have tried to shoehorn in a Lexus car somewhere.
Yeah, but it's a really, really cool video if you've got any interest whatsoever in a hoverboard. And if you haven't, what are you thinking? It's well worth a watch. It's good fun.
Cool. Yeah, I think we probably should wrap up there, because I'm sure we're definitely tipping beyond our
We're not too bad. We're not too bad for time. But yeah, we should wrap up. There's not much else for us to talk about this week. As we say, it's been a light week.
No, although there was one last Taylor Swift announcement.
Yeah. Oh, of course, yeah. Go on then. Let's see what Tay-Tay is up to.
This week, she came to the rescue of a group of elderly ladies.
Right.
They wanted to put on a performance that involved them performing to Shake It Off.
Okay.
The rights were pulled at the last minute, but thanks to a Twitter campaign, Taylor came to the rescue, gave them permission. And that's why this week the hashtag was Cray Cray for Tay Tay.
There aren't words.
Just because I keep up my Taylor Swift news, Neil.
I'd love to describe to you how uninterested I am. Unfortunately, words don't exist.
Well, we're definitely going to have to wrap it up there then.
Okay. Yeah, let's leave it on a high.
Yeah, definitely.
Okay, well, yeah, so again, words and things that I want to say. Yeah, if you do want to get in touch with us, then there is Twitter, which is Enthusiast Tech, where you can get in touch with either me or Simon. And fairly soon, we are going to have a way of subscribing to the podcast.
We're getting there.
Yeah, we're getting there. We know what to do. We've got a couple of things we need to sort out before we can do it, but we should hopefully have it done pretty soon. So again, thanks for listening. I'm Neil.
And I'm Simon.
And that's been another Tech Enthusiast.